thank you for your time. I am super, I've been so excited to talk to you.
Yes, thank you for being flexible too. And I know it took me like a long time. It's just, there was like so much travel and stuff. I was like, well, let's like do this when I'm actually like relaxed and not like running around the country.
Yeah. No, no worries. No worries. Hi everyone, thank you for tuning in. This is Stephanie with Women Who Secure. Today's special guest is Akira. She is currently in developer relations with Bright Security, but also plays a huge role with Security Weekly as a co-host in AppSec Weekly podcast. Akira, thank you so much for joining. I know it's been quite a while since we've connected, but super excited to get to know you and happy to have you here.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I am so glad to finally rendezvous.
Yes. Okay. So you have a very unique journey. I've already taken a look at your LinkedIn. Your website is amazing. Weren't we on the phone and you also sing opera?
Yeah, that's me. For a little under 10 years, I made my living primarily as a classical musician.
That is so cool.
Thanks. Yeah. I still perform. Actually in a show that's going to go up in 2 weeks. So the nice thing that I like about tech is that it's a more or less stable 9 to 5, and I can do my rehearsals in the evening and still keep up with that side of myself, that passion of mine. And I'm really blessed to be able to do that.
Yeah, I think that's super crucial to have something that you enjoy besides work, right? I mean, a lot of us can kind of get super soaked into tech and really get burnt out. So I love that you're doing that. How are you doing now? How's your current role? And then we'll kind of get into how you got into it.
How am I doing now? That's such a good question. Right now I'm doing really well. I am really enjoying my role because I work at a startup. And when you work at a startup, from what I've experienced, you get to try your hand at a lot of different things. And since I'm relatively new to my career in tech, I've only been working in tech for about, I want to say, 3.5 years. It's super cool to be in a place that supports me trying a lot of different things, really spreading my wings, seeing what does work and what doesn't work. I have a really great mentor in Tanya, and I'm excited to start working on some new features for our product that are going to be involving a complementary company that I cannot name at this time, but I'm really excited to start brokering some really great relationships between some B2B, not exactly sales, but collaboration. And that's really exciting for me. Mm-hmm. The one downside I would say is that I'm feeling a little bit isolated and cut off from my ironically like women in tech community. When I first started out, I did volunteer with an organization called Chick Tech, and I ran their adult program in Central Oregon. And I loved it. I was just so happy there doing this volunteer work because it gave me a framework of other women and non-binary individuals to like talk tech and talk about our life in tech and talk about our struggle in tech. But ever since I moved out of Central Oregon, I have not had that kind of like opportunity. I have not pursued it either. So it's not like it just hasn't fallen in my lap. I just haven't really had the time to pursue it. So I think is the one big missing in my career right now is like just that community of people that, you know, like kind of look like me and think like me and have a similar background to me, which is definitely an underrepresented group in tech. So that's why I'm really glad to be on this podcast, because I'm like, heck yeah, Women Who Secure, like, let's go. Let's get this rolling. Because we really
need each other. Oh, I love that. Yeah. No, that's very true. And I'm so excited to have you on here. I think you bring a lot of a different perspective into, you know, how you got started and who you represent as today. You said you got out of Central Oregon. Where are you now?
I'm in Colorado. This is actually my home state. I grew up here and I went to college here. I'm very fortunate to have gone to the University of Denver out here.
Nice. I love Colorado.
Colorado's the best, dude.
I'm thinking about moving there.
Oh, really?
Yes. I don't know. I will. I don't know what area, but I've always been gravitated towards Colorado. I accidentally went there like 3 birthdays in a row. Oh. And it's like every year I'm like, oh shit, I'm in Colorado again.
Oh, that's definitely, I think, feel like 3 is a lucky number too. So it's
right.
Meant to be.
Yeah, it's a sign. It's a sign. Okay. Well, that must play a huge role. You know, and even to be like very candid, I really started Women Who Secure because I feel like I just can't keep up with a lot of other, you know, inclusive or women in tech communities. I'm in Indianapolis. It's really not common to have communities or women that are in tech or in security meet up. It's very like man driven. Like it's like it's the Midwest, if you can imagine that. So I've always, you know, I've always wanted to do this kind of in person, which I think that's the goal of where we're going. So, you know, hopefully we can do this in person and like actually meet people. But I totally get what you're saying. I highly agree with that. I've been feeling the same way with even just my whole career.
I think one thing I was thinking about the other day is that there is a difference between empathy and identification. And I think people that have different backgrounds than you or look different than you or different genders than you can still have empathy for your experience, and you can likewise have empathy for theirs, but they can't necessarily identify with your experience, nor can you necessarily identify with theirs. And having that ability to have people that identify with you is so important and underrated, because I think empathy will only get you so far. And I know that's really controversial, because I know empathy is like such a hot topic right now, and how it's like, quote unquote, like the most important skill of like the 21st century. And sure, it's really important. It's a great skill to have, absolutely. But it's a different experience talking to somebody that completely understands where you're coming from, because they've walked a similar path.
Yeah. Yep. You're relating to them, and you're not only showing empathy, but you're also like, you've been through it, so you can relate a lot more.
Yeah, absolutely.
So going into your current role, for those that I don't even think I understand what a developer relations is.
Yeah.
So if we could just spend maybe, you know, however long you want, just to speak about your current role and a little bit about Bright Security.
Yeah, sure. So developer relations is a vast job. It encompasses so much and so many different types of work. It completely depends on the company you work for, what your day-to-day actually looks like. But at the end of the day, developer relations exists because a lot of SaaS companies right now are developer focused, meaning their primary customer or their primary users are developers. So they need to have a dev-friendly product. They need to have dev-friendly documentation. They need to have dev-friendly communities. So if you don't have any of those things, you can expect that developer adaptation will be very low. Now, that shows up at Bright because we're a dev-first enterprise DAST. And what a DAST stands for is Dynamic Application Security Testing. And our whole mission is to shift security left in the system development lifecycle, such that software developers can be empowered to start using our tool early on in their working processes. Now, if we have a tool that is not developer friendly, then of course that's not going to happen, because even if the AppSec people pay for the product the first year, it's the developers that are going to decide whether or not they want to renew. So that's very important to keep top of mind. So for example, something I do is I write a lot of blogs. I do a lot of security training. I do a lot of product training. I go and speak at conferences to sort of evangelize this idea of shifting left and this idea that security is everybody's job, not just the CISO and security people's job, right? And something else that I'm starting to do in my work right now as well is to learn a little bit more about AppSec and a little bit more about pen testing, so that I can have more boots on the ground experience, so that I can speak a lot more authoritatively as well. My main background is in developer education. I have co-written software development boot camps. I've been a webmaster, where half my job was actually working on our WordPress sites and working in PHP. And the other half of my job was like explaining what was going on to my boss, who like just was a little bit, he didn't know a lot about tech, right? So just like having to teach myself and then quickly turn that around and teach other people has kind of been my MO of my career. And that's sort of still what happens, especially in DevRel. So yeah. And then a little bit more about Bright. Like I said, we're a dynamic application security testing tool. We are dev focused, but we are mainly for enterprise customers at this time. And yeah, it's a great company. And like I said, our mission is really to push left. And that's such a buzzword nowadays. Like it's kind of similar as like empathy being a buzzword, but pushing left again means that we're trying to empower developers and of course other professionals like DevOps professionals, AppSec professionals, and so on and so forth, to start having a security mindset as early as possible in their software development journey. So instead of having, for example, a DAS tool run right before a feature is released into production, and then you find all these security bugs and all these errors, and the AppSec team has to go back to the developers and say, hey, like, we found like 50 things wrong. And then the devs are like, cool, I guess that ruins my next four sprints. Like, thanks a lot. We would be able to help devs find and remediate these issues far sooner in their process so that we can eliminate that main cause of friction. So that's a little bit about us.
That's neat. Thank you for explaining that so in depth and detailed. I love that, you know, with Bright Security and AppSec, the portal looks really neat when I looked at it. So it's exciting that you're also working with a startup. I find tech startups really exciting, and I'd love to see like where they're going and how you're doing. And prior to kind of Bright Security, and we can kind of backtrack of your background, you said your background was more in web development.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. I did a lot of stuff with WordPress, was my main thing. I have done some work with front-end web development as well, so in React and JavaScript. I taught, of course, it was interesting. I taught myself, and then I turned it around quickly and taught other people how to do full-stack web development with JavaScript for a course that I created in conjunction with some colleagues and also MIT, which was a really cool experience. I learned so much in a very short course of time. I felt like I got the benefit of the education, like almost as much, like if not more so than the students did, which was kind of cool. Yeah, and then like I said before that, I was in Opera for about 10 years and had no real interest in computers, which is interesting because a lot of people in tech have liked computers since they were like children, and I was a complete and total Luddite until I got into tech as a profession. And now I am so fascinated by computers and by coding and by computer science that I actually am in school now for a computer science degree.
So you're back in school.
Yeah, I decided to put myself back to school and like get that really in-depth education, because the more I do this, the more I'm like, whoa, this is actually like really sweet. It's just that, you know, I always excelled in my early life in writing, and I was always excelled in creativity. I always excelled in music. And when you decide to become a classical musician, it sort of just encompasses your entire life. Like,
yeah,
you live, sleep, eat, breathe classical. Like, you breathe the music, but you also breathe the lifestyle. And there's not a lot of margin to try other things, which is why I'm so glad I'm in tech now. And I'm like, wow, like I can try like so many different things. This is awesome.
But that's so cool because you bring in a lot of different perspectives. I think that, and you know, thanks for sharing us with the background. I really want to learn more about way before this, because when you're focused on something, it sounds like you've just been like, you're such a badass, like you're so amazing. And I think that, yeah, like everything you've started, you're just like killing it, even with Opera and like with tech. And I think a lot of that is driven by your motive and how focused you are as a person. Walk me through your background, like prior to music, like I want to know how you got started in music and then how did you pivot from there to tech? And I know that's going to be a long story, so we can take a little few pauses and stuff.
Oh yeah, for sure. And if you want to ask me questions, feel free to.
Yeah.
I'll take some time to breathe. Like,
it's so cool. And I want to start from like, you know, yeah, let's start. Like, how did you get into music? When did you know, or, you know, what did you study, or like, when did you start?
Yeah. So I got into music when I was about 5. I was very young.
Oh, wow.
And
from parents or how did.
So my grandmother actually was the one that introduced it to me. She would play like our classical radio station all the time. She also had like tapes by Bach and Mozart, kind of like the big name early classical to classical composers, maybe a little bit of late classical in there with Beethoven. But that was really her time period of music. Mm-hmm. And I would sing along with like the violin lines. And I'm not saying like, oh, I was perfect and I have perfect pitch and I hit every single note, but I don't know that it's totally normal for like 5-year-olds to like turn on the radio and like sing along with like a Paganini like piece or something like that, right? It's not that normal. I started piano lessons when I was a little bit later in childhood. And then when I was I was in 8th grade when I discovered, like completely by accident, that I had a voice. And here's how I discovered it. I was a really shy kid, and for what it's worth, I'm actually still a very shy adult. I've just learned how to adapt around it. But I didn't really speak at all. Like I barely verbalized. But I really, really was drawn to singing. So I begged my mother, I guess actually this was in 6th grade, to let me take voice lessons. And my mom probably felt bad for me because I was like this really, really weird, like shy, quiet kid that like was terrified of people. And so when I showed an interest in something, she probably was like, oh my God, like my kid is, at least has interest, you know, she's going to be okay. So she went ahead and let me take voice lessons. And I'm so privileged to be able to do that. That is not something that most people have access to.
Right.
So I took voice lessons. I discovered I had a voice. I auditioned for my first show when I was in 9th grade, and I got like this little bit part, and I had a bunch of people come up to me afterward and be like, wow, like I have such a big voice fit in such a small body, because I was like 4 foot even at the time. I'm a very short person as well as being a shy person. So yeah. And then the time came to choose what I wanted to do with my college years. Again, I'm very fortunate to have been able to go to college, so a lot of this is natural talent combined with immense amounts of privilege. When I came time to decide what I wanted to do for college, I either wanted to go to school and become an English teacher, or I wanted to go to conservatory. And I figured, you know what, conservatory is going to be the hardest option. If I choose classical music and opera, it'll be really, really difficult. And I really want to spend my time, especially while I'm young, doing things that are really difficult and are going to teach me a lot. So I auditioned, I got into a few schools, and the one I picked was DU. Finished up my degree. It was a 4-year conservatory degree. I took a couple engineering classes while I was there, but so that started, is another story.
Sorry, Akira.
Yeah, so no problem.
You were at DU, which is Denver University, right?
University of Denver, yeah.
Okay, University of Denver. Mm-hmm. And you said that as an adolescent, or, you know, just a young teenager, you really wanted to do things that were hard and like challenge yourself.
Yep.
Where do you think that mindset came from at such an early age?
I honestly think that that is something that came from like God. Whether or not you believe in a higher power, it was really not the point here, but that came from just like an innate wisdom that I have no idea how I got that. I really don't. And I'm not saying I was like a wise 17-year-old, because that's definitely not it. But there was one part of me that just like knew that I found a deep satisfaction in doing stuff that is really, really difficult, and that it was a good idea at the time to pursue the hardest option because I would learn the most. And that's something that's really kept me alive in tech in general, and in my professional career as a musician as well, is like, I always seek out places where I can learn the most, not necessarily places where I will like get paid the most.
I love that.
Yeah, so anyway, fast forward 10 years later, I had a great career, I had a really good time, but I was like stagnating, I was really bored. And we circle back to this idea of wanting to do something else that's really hard. And a former boyfriend at the time suggested that I try coding. And like I said, I was a Luddite. I mean, in classical music, it's very old school. You don't really like use a lot of technology at all. Like all your stuff's on paper, and like the only reason you ever use a computer is to like print out more music from the internet or whatever.
Yeah.
Was this in college when
that boyfriend said that?
No. This was after I'd been in the field for about 8 years.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. But I was miserable. Like I was really depressed at the time too. And like, there was a lot of mental health stuff going on, and I was just like, classical music ain't it. Cause like, if I ever have more serious health things, like we don't have a health insurance as musicians. Like, are you kidding me? Like,
yeah.
So it's definitely a very unstable career path. You have to be like in excellent health at all times to be able to do it. Things of this nature.
Oh, I can't imagine.
Yeah. And I'm sure there's people that have made it work. It's just, I'm not one of those people. So
yeah. And you were in it long enough.
Yeah. I think I remember hearing a statistic, and don't quote me on this, but I've heard a stat that says people tend to change careers every 7 to 10 years. Mm. And that's pretty much exactly what I did.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I had a former partner suggest coding. I told him he was crazy.
He's like, what is that? No, I don't even touch technology.
Yeah, I was like, I didn't own a computer. I didn't own a regular smartphone. I owned a flip phone because I was like, smartphones are like there to hook you in, and like all you do is stare at a screen, and like I have a life. And I still like definitely think that, like,
yeah,
I had a flip phone for a while, and I'm thinking about going back to it here pretty soon because I'm pretty tired of my smartphone, but that's neither here nor there.
Right.
There was a reason I landed in cyber, right? Because I'm still very like distrustful of technology and the things that go into it. Like, not like I think it's designed poorly or anything. It's just there's so much margin for error that it's like, oh my gosh. Anyway, where was I?
So did you end up learning about code, or what piqued your interest because he said that?
Yeah, so he like asked me to go to this weekend course at a school called the Turing School. And they had like free weekend courses where you could come and like learn some web development. And oh, cool. I went, and I thought it was the coolest freaking thing I'd ever seen in my life. Like, we learned how to post to Twitter from the command line in like a day. Like, I'd never used a computer. And then I was like posting to Twitter from the command line, like, you know, using the Twitter API and stuff. And I was like, this is insane. Like, this is genuinely insane. I had no idea you could do any of this. And it kind of like clicked for me. I don't know. Like, I'm not saying that I was like, oh, I'm an amazing programmer, because that's like definitely not what I'm getting at here. But something about it kind of, in my brain, it was like, oh, finally, something that makes sense. Like I said, I had been going through some really severe mental health problems before and during my time at Turing. And this was a thing that for the first time, it was the first time that my brain had been able to not experience like excruciating depression. It was like a moment of relief.
Wow.
And I was like, clearly I have to pursue this. So I went to Turing for a while, and unfortunately the mental health problems became so severe that I decided I needed to take some time and heal up. So I withdrew from Turing. I considered going back actually, but after I took some time off to recover from mental health problems, I figured, well, hey, let me just like try to get into the field on my own. Because then I won't have to like pay money for any more schooling. Mm-hmm. And let me just see if someone gives me a job.
Was touring like a university?
No, like- touring is it's a code school that used to be based here in Denver, and now it's fully remote. It's really good, actually. Like, I finished about half the program, and I learned a ton. Like, I'm shocked how much I learned in like my several months of being there. I think I was there for about 5.5 months, and I've had people in computer science programs like tell me that they went to Turing and they learned more in like 6 weeks than they did in like 2 years of comp sci. At least about programming.
I mean, those are the schools that are so neat to me. I love that I'm glad that you took the break for your mental health and you figured out, hey, I'm not going to push myself through something that's only going to make it worse.
Yeah. I think that having mental health struggles has been kind of my Achilles heel in my later life, because these issues like kind of cropped up in my late 20s.
Yeah.
And that's an interesting thing to like, that I also like think is really important to be transparent about, especially in tech, is because like tech is really freaking stressful, man. Mm-hmm. Like these jobs are not easy. Like they pay very well. And I think they pay well because they are not easy. And also people can say, you know, the market's inflated and yada, yada, yada. But I prefer to see it more as I'm getting compensated for the amount of like immense work that this is. And and if you have mental health issues, which many of us do, many of us are neurodivergent in tech, and there's a myriad of mental health, like I don't want to call them problems, but challenges and different ways of experiencing the world. And that has definitely wrecked my stuff. One of my jobs in particular, I was going through such immense mental health crises that I just did not do a good job at that job. And it's kind of embarrassing when I look back on it. It's like, oh man, like it was a learning experience, and I'm very grateful to the people I worked with, and I learned a lot. I really wish I could have provided more value for that company, but you know, sometimes you gotta just take that time and you gotta heal up, and it's cyclical, right? So I actually ended up leaving that job as well to take a little bit of time off. And just sometimes I feel like I'm in like a pattern that I'm working to break, and it is breaking, where I have to kind of like, I go pretty hard for a few years, and then I'm like, I gotta take a couple months and just like regroup.
I mean that's literally needed for, you know, your mental health. And you, doesn't matter like what you have or like what you've been through, I think everyone needs a break. My friend actually struggled a lot with mental health, and it was, you know, her first job out of college into tech, and it drained her. Mm-hmm. And she knew right then and there that in that first year that it was over. She took 2 years off.
Wow.
And traveled the world and did all these things. And now she's with a company that it just like this opportunity landed in her lap, and it's the most amazing opportunity ever for her. It's, you know, kind of like everything she's wanted. Like they're paying her to travel, and it's like, you just have to take that break and not settle for anything. And if you're not, you know, performing right or anything, I think you know that. And you know, it's just like a big lesson learned, and you just really have to prioritize and take care of yourself, because at the end of the day, these companies will replace you and can replace you within a second.
Yeah, for sure. And it's not worth like destroying your health or your body for a job, right? I think it's worth pushing yourself, and maybe sometimes that does mean to a physical limit, but there's a difference between pushing yourself and challenging yourself and like not taking care of your mind. And especially in knowledge work, like what I'm learning, which is why I've gotten a lot better at breaking this kind of like pattern or cyclical experience, is you have to take care of your mind first. You can't take care of the company first. You got to take care of yourself first, and then you can take care of your responsibilities. You can take care of the company.
Yeah.
So I guess the only other thing I want to say on that, I mean, we can talk about this for hours, right? But for our listeners, I just want to encourage you, like, if you're experiencing any kind of mental health, like, challenge, like, just know you're not alone. I would encourage you to seek support, seek out that time to heal up. It's okay to take breaks, but also, like, it's okay to continue on. It's okay to press on. And I really didn't like it when people were like, well, it gets better. And I'm like, oh yeah, okay for you maybe, but it got better for me. And I think if what I dealt with, it can get better for someone like me, then I'm pretty sure that it can get better for a lot of people. So just keep on keeping on. And there's an article that I need to link to on my website where I actually wrote really in depth about my experience, and mm-hmm. always happy to talk to people about that too. So yeah
cool, super important. Yeah, well, sure. Yeah, you're right. We could talk about it forever. I'm a huge advocate, and I think everyone in my friend group always calls me their therapist, because mm-hmm. I've really pushed, like, it's weird how we fell into it, but my really close friends just fell into tech and went back to school to, like, do security. And they're, like, in it now, but, you know, we meet up almost, like, once a month, either that be virtual or in person. And we always talk about what we're going through, like, you know, what could we do better on? How's everyone doing? Because we've also, you know, as we grow up in our 20s and 30s, we're realizing that you just really need a really good support system.
Yeah, you really do. And that's why I'm a big fan of women in tech groups or anything, honestly, that
just feels like communities that really support each other.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So, okay, we'll backtrack to, so you took a break and you said, hey, let me try to get a job in tech by myself. Yeah. So what did you get? How did you land that?
I got this little job as a webmaster, right? So it was a lot of fun. It was mostly working with WordPress, and, like, it wasn't the most, like, involved programming job in the world, which is fine because it was my first ever job and I was teaching myself and I had, like, no idea what I was doing, but I was still able to hack it. And I got a bunch of stuff done, which was cool. And I learned a lot. But let's see here. I was mainly working on, like, the WordPress sites that we had that were for e-commerce. Learned a lot about some front-end development. I did some work in UX and UI. Did a little tiny bit of PHP. Spent a lot of time in the Linux cPanel.
Fun.
Yeah. So I learned a little bit about, like, databases and things of this nature. It was kind of like a little smorgasbord of everything, right?
And how did you land it? Did you just apply and you got it? Because without you having the experience, like,
I networked my way into it. Not like I went to, like, a networking event and, like, drank champagne. That's not it at all. I actually was working because I just needed to, I still needed to work, right? Like, I needed to have money to eat food. I guess that's important. So I actually picked up this, like, little tiny weekend gig. That sounded fun, and you're gonna laugh. The weekend gig was doing henna on people at a state fair. And
what?
The person who hired me to do henna, like, really, really admired my personality and, like, thought I was a good, like, personable person, that I did really well talking to customers, and, like, I actually, like, cared and was really reliable. I, like, showed up on time and, you know, I didn't scam people out of money, I guess, which apparently is a problem. I didn't know that that's, like, an actual issue with people that sometimes can work in these particular job paths. It was very interesting.
Wow.
I mean, I feel like every boss has stories though of, like, my employees. I told him, like, you know, we got to know each other. He was like, I told him I had, like, gone to code school for a little while and, like, I was starting to learn to enjoy computers. He's like, oh, can you do all of our websites? I was like, yeah, I don't know. Can I? He was like, well, do you have, like, a portfolio? Like, I can see some of your work. I was like, no, like, I certainly do not, kind sir. He was like, well, okay. Like, I really trust you and it's really hard to find people I trust. So I'm going to just let you try. I was like, are you serious? So that's how I got the job. It didn't pay much and it was only, like, three quarter time, but
But it was okay. Experience, and he gave
it was experience. Care. Yeah, it was wow. Experience. Yeah,
that is hilarious. That's so yeah. Sweet of him.
Yeah, it was really cool. And then that's at the cool. time too, I also like landed an internship, in Bend, Oregon as well, like working on like Python apps, and that was pretty cool. Also just through networking, because I like went to the Bend, Oregon JavaScript meetup. I gave a talk, and this is really important if you're listening. I'm going to harp on this later on giving talks and writing blogs and mentoring other people, because that is like career gold. I gave a talk, and then I mentioned like, hey, I'm looking to like start working in this field. Like, I don't have a ton of experience, but like, I really want to learn. And then someone came up to me and they were like, hey, like, you should talk to this individual about this internship that they're hiring for. And I did, and I got the internship, and it was incredible. I learned a lot. And at the time, like I said, like I kind of felt like I didn't know what I was doing, which is not necessarily the best place to be, but I also learned how to teach myself under mm-hmm. pressure, which is a really good skill to have. So I don't know that I've ever, this is why I decided to go back to college, right? Is because I've never really had a cohesive, like, beginning, middle, end, like, educational experience to help me understand computers. And help me understand computer science and even programming. So I would really like to have that. It's a good dovetail. It's a good supplement. But if my experience says anything, it's also that you can learn on the job. And it's really important to put yourself out there in those situations where you can learn on the job. Because I feel like that's a more practical way to learn, but it can leave you kind of fragmented, which is how I feel now. I feel like my knowledge is very like, it's like a hard drive from the olden days that isn't a solid state drive, and it needs to get defragged, and you know, there's memory kind of stored all over it, and it's just kind of skipping around. So that's why I'm in college. Sorry, that was like a really long answer.
No, I loved it. Thank you for explaining it. Really insightful to learn about your background, but also that you're noticing things about yourself and the way that you learn. And now it leads you to the path of going back to school for, I guess, a proper traditional route education of developing. What did you choose to study, and like, where are you going, and what are you looking forward to learn within school?
Yeah, so I'm choosing to study computer science. It's a bachelor program. What I would ideally like to do is at some point is get my master's even, which would be flipping sweet. But I have to start at square one, right?
That's
nice. Going to a school called Hamming College. I started, this is actually interesting, let's just say TLDR, I'm starting like in earnest in January. So the classes that I need to take are, you know, starting in January. So that's when I'm going to be going and spending the bulk of my time.
It is remote.
It is remote. The curriculum is fantastic. The main reason I looked into Hamming initially is because there is an individual named Michael Hartle, who is a wonderful tech educator. I think his courses on web development, on Ruby on Rails, are just, I think they're the gold standard in self-teaching, self-paced learning. So I had taken his Ruby class, and I'm actually working through his Rails class, his Rails 7 class right now. Anyway, Hamming College bought his company. They bought, or at least they bought a license to have proprietary courses taught by, written and potentially, I'm not sure if he's teaching it, but he's definitely writing the curriculum. And since I'm such a fan of Mr. Hartle, I said I gotta check this out. And so I met the faculty, I did like a couple teaser classes. I'm so excited about it. Like the thing that's really lighting my fire about what I'm gonna learn right now is I get to finally learn math. Like I get to finally learn math and have it not be like this extremely stressful experience. So
math?
Yeah, math. Like, so like, of course, the basis of all computer science is discrete mathematics.
Oh, gosh, you are just, we're the total opposite. I hate math. I'm like, wow, like all this, all this developing, all these languages. So you're more interested in the developing aspect.
I'm not sure yet. Okay. You know, I have a hunch I'm going to get a lot more into doing things like potentially pen testing. I'm really fascinated by secure coding in general. So it's interesting because I like to build stuff. Don't get me wrong. I love to write code. I think it's super fun, but I am more interested almost in like the auditing process of like, is this secure? Like, how can we break this? How can we hack this? How can we?
Well, will you learn about security with your degree, or will you have like any classes along that?
That is a fascinating question. So I don't know that I'll learn about secure coding. I know I'm going to take programming classes, but I don't know that those classes will have a security component. And this is actually something that we talk a lot about in the security industry, is this sort of lack of security focused curriculum in a pragmatic manner in post-secondary education. So a lot of times, and I've looked into a lot of colleges too. This is not just like, I wasn't just randomly like, I'm going to go to college. I did a lot of research and I sat in on a lot of classes from many different institutions. And I never once ran into a programming course where they talked about secure code. I would read syllabuses. I would read like course offerings, and I have never seen a secure coding course in the wild. I've seen cybersecurity courses like intro to red teaming, intro to pen testing, intro to cryptography, things of this nature, but nothing that has to do with secure code.
Yeah, I haven't ever seen that either, and I don't think in school we've even talked about it.
No, I have never seen it, which is interesting though, because I think according to the Verizon data breach report as of 2020. And I need to up the ante and finish reading the 2022 report. But as of 2020, I think it's up to 60 to 80% of data breaches are caused by insecure software. Mm-hmm. I need to double check my numbers on that one. But if anyone, of course, reads that Verizon data breach report, and maybe I'm not sure if this goes on YouTube, but you can certainly put in the comments, like, actually, it's this number. But right. it's a giant number. It is not... It's not insignificant. And unless you really seek out to self-educate yourself, you're not going to learn these principles. You're just not.
Yeah. It's like, who's teaching them it? When
I am.
Right. Right. When I went to the Woman in Tech or Woman in Tech event in Denver, I think 2-3 years ago, and I met someone who worked at a company, and she did DevSecOps, which was my first time learning about secure coding and that kind of aspect and realm of it that she specialized, you know, similar to you, was being between developers and security and just creating that secure coding process for the company. And it, and now there's other companies that are doing it, but if you look at, like you said, traditional education, that is not their purpose, or that's just not what they have right now, or an option.
Right. Yeah, it's just not on the radar. And I think it's because
maybe nobody's teaching it.
Yeah, I mean, there's just, it's so new. Yeah. I don't know if it's had its time to weave its way into academia yet. I really don't.
That would be really neat to start seeing that, though.
I mean, I'll probably just end up teaching my colleagues about it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm like, did you know that you didn't validate your input? That's a really big problem.
You're going to start teaching the professors.
We'll see. They're pretty smart, and I don't want to presume. But, you know, if they call me and ask me, I won't not do it.
I mean, I think, you know, it would be neat to, when you are, whatever study or class that you're in is, you know, when they do have an option of, oh, you get to choose your own topic and present or write a paper, I think that'll really benefit you, but also teaching others as well at the same time.
Yeah, I think the main reason I am still in tech is because I have the ability to teach other people. And that's kind of been my thing I lean the most heavily on. It's like my superpower. So like I said, I'm definitely not the greatest programmer that ever lived. Like, that's not true. Right. I mean, I know how to code. I could work with you to, you know, spin up some pretty basic apps and things of this nature, and maybe even figure out some more advanced problems. But while I'm doing it, I can teach you every single thing I just did in a way that makes sense to you, so that you can kind of follow in the path.
Yeah, that's nice. I think that's a good trait to have, especially when, you know, when you're looking at other jobs, or when you're talking to interviewers nowadays, they're asking you, can you mentor? Are you coachable at the same time? Mm-hmm. And I think that's a really good trait to have within any career, just any career, even outside of tech. And Akira, what, I know we've kind of spent some time talking about your path and your current role. How are you doing outside of work? You know, as a co-host with AppSec Weekly Podcast, I know it says freelance, is that like more of a volunteering thing, or?
Yeah, so that is a volunteer position. We have a show that goes out every Monday. It's with me, a gentleman named Mike Shima, and another gentleman named John Kinsella are also my co-hosts, excuse me.
Yeah, I've been listening to Security Weekly since I was in college.
Are you serious?
Yeah. So when I saw you post that, I was like, oh,
like, that's awesome.
Yeah, because I've never seen anyone else on there that I've, like, it's always been them.
Yeah, there you go. I just started it, so I'm still getting my feet wet. I'm learning how to.
I love that. Wait, so how did you get started?
You know, I put myself in as a guest. I was like, I promise you, we're going to have a great time and you're going to really learn a lot and I'm going to learn a lot. So please have me as a guest on your podcast.
Do you write them or have to sign up for something?
What? I'm sorry. Can you say that again?
How did you join? Like, do you write them, or what's the process of joining their podcast?
You just write them. They have a link on their website. Because it's a pretty easy,
cool.
Yeah, so you can actually, if you want to go to, is there actually a way to links to your
the podcast? Yeah.
Okay, cool. So
I'll ask you for it later, and it's like a bio, headshot, and links. Yeah.
Okay, great. So I'll put that in the links. But yeah, they're great. We're always looking for guests. So. Anyway, TLDR, they had me on as a guest. They liked my personality. I really liked them. And they asked me to be a co-host shortly thereafter, after just one time guesting, which I thought was amazing. So yeah, I'm really fortunate. Like, part of my hosting duties is to find interesting things that are going on in AppSec, or at least in cyber, and as it relates to AppSec, because we do a news segment every week. And I remember there was this piece of advice I got from someone when I first started, which is, don't be afraid to jump into the technical aspects. A lot of times women will self-select out of the technical stuff. And I have done that for sure in the past. And I'm like working very hard to break that habit. So I choose articles that are really technical. Like, I choose reports that are like insanely technical, and I have like no idea what they are talking about, and then I have to learn and I have to research and I have to research some more, and then I have to write about it on my end so I can like synthesize my thoughts, and then I use the news segment as a way to just educate myself and then educate our listeners, which is really cool and so challenging.
Yeah, that is really cool. I'm so excited to listen to other episodes, and I'm already learning a lot from you. So I think you just have a really gravitating and teachable voice.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, that works out well, you know? Yeah. Luckily, my background in music gives me an expressive voice. So
yeah, that's cool. I mean, right after this, I'm literally going to go try and listen to some opera that you're singing.
Oh, okay.
Akira, this has been really good. For our listeners that are listening in, Is there any advice or maybe last words of encouragement that you would truly give to somebody, whether they're a career transitioner looking to get in the field or, you know, currently in the position right now?
Yeah, I think that there's three things and I'll do them in rapid succession. Number one, find a community and stay in it. Number two, go for where you're going to learn the most, especially if you're early on in your career, not where you're going to earn the most. Number three is to teach and mentor other people what you learn, because that will supercharge your learning and also give you incredible career collateral. So whether that's in the form of talks, writing, formal mentorship, anything of that nature, put some money in your career bank, because you can really, you can withdraw that later. And it's a great way to boost your career and also solidify your knowledge and most importantly, help other people, because that really feels good.
Akira, where can people connect with you? Where can they learn more about you?
Yeah, so you can find me on my website, www.akirabrand.com. That's what I like to call my digital garden. It's got a lot of really good resources there, as well as places you can reach me, like, for example, LinkedIn or email. If you have direct questions for me, you can always email me at akira.brand@yahoo.com. I don't have a Twitter account, so you can't find me there, but you can find me on LinkedIn. That's where I like to post a lot of content as well. It's just linkedin.com/in/akirabrand. So mostly everything is just my name. So yeah, I would love to hear from you if you have questions or comments or anything of that nature. Would definitely love to have a conversation.
Yay, thank you. Yeah, I took a look at Akira's website, everyone, and she is truly a hack of all trades. I love this platform that you have. I think that she gives a lot of great resources and it's not just about her. So yes, I'll link that. We'll put everything in the description in the bio. Akira, thank you so much for being featured on Women Who Secure. And I can't wait to kind of stay in touch and see where your journey takes you after you finish school.
Thank you so much, Stephanie. And I thank you to all our listeners. And I've really enjoyed being on this show.